Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Temura Daf Chof Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins toward the upper part of Daf Chof Zayin. You'll notice a triangle preceded by the expression Boy Abaye, about 10 lines from the top. Before we begin the study of the Gemara itself, let us glance at the outside margin where you see the Nosei Mivneh heading. We feature topic headings and structural notes from time to time, and sometimes we combine them into one note, as is the case here. The Nosei is a topic, and Mivneh represents the structure. Here we introduce the triangle, and indicate that it surrounds the expression Hoyu Lefonov, and a double underline with dots in it, the Omar Hare Elu Tachas Elu. You'll see that repeated, a series of cases here. These are Sidra, a series shel She'elos, a series of questions, Be'inyin Hatposa Upidyon, cases involving Tmura, replication of sanctity, and Pidyon, redemption. You'll notice in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, between the Gemara and the Rashi, a series of numbers in triangles, 1, 2, 3, and 4 as you go down the page. These represent four questions, four cases, and we have illustrations that accompany these cases in the extreme inside margin of the Gemara. So as we learn the Gemara, you might want to keep one finger, so to speak, on the cases in the inside margin to help follow the issue. Up till now, we were discussing the word tachas that we saw in the Mishnah, and explained that the word tachas, if you say zu tachas zu, and you have a sanctified animal in front of you and a chulin, a mundane animal in front of you, what is the person's intention when he says zu tachazu? Is he attempting to redeem it, or is he attempting to replicate the kedusha? The replication of kedusha is tmura, and that is a sin. Redemption is something that, in the event that the sacrifice happens to have a blemish on it, redemption is a possibility, and that is, of course, without sin. So now we have a few cases. Boy Abaye. Abaye asks, Hoyu lefonov shtei behemos shel kodesh ba'alos mum. You have two kodesh blemished animals, two sacrifices that develop blemishes, and you can see that on the little diagram in the inside margin. Kodesh, colon, and mum, those are two blemished animals. And what else does he have? Ushtei behemos shel chulin tamimos. Two unblemished, mundane, or common animals. And in light of our previous shiur, where we spoke about the placing of a hand on one or the other, here there is no hand placing, so we don't get involved with that particular clarification that was achieved by hand placing. One can refer to the very end of our previous shiur for that topic. So now you have this setup, four animals, two and two. The Omar and the owner declared, Hare Elu Tachas Elu. I want these to be instead of these. Mahu. Mi Omar lat fuse miskaven veloki. Do we say that this person's intention is to replicate the sanctity that's on the balimum? And a balmum, a blemished animal, can be involved in a tmura. So is his intention for tmura to replicate the kedusha onto the chulin animals and would thereby be guilty of lashes, lucky lashes, because of violating the posuk that says lo yomir? It's a negative command not to do that. Maybe that is his intention. Or possibly the second side of the question, and you can see we mark off questions of this nature with an aleph, oy dilma beis, o dilma, the second side, kol hecho di iko hetera, where there is an option of that which is allowed or permitted, lo shavik inish hetera, a person will not push aside, pass up on that which is allowed, the ovid isura, and do something that's not allowed. So it could be that in this case where he has an option of that which is allowed, namely redemption, when he is focusing on these Kodesh Balimum, his intention may be one of a redemption nature, and that would be allowed. The Imtim Tzilomar, now this Imtim Tzilomar is abbreviated, and you'll see this appears again and again in these questions. We call this the build-up style, and to make it easier to see at the transition point in these build-up of questions, we dashed underlined the Imtim Tzilomar expression. So Imtim Tzilomar means if you choose one side, if you choose to say, Kol hechadiko hetera lo shavik inish v'avidisur, where a person has a permissible path to take, he won't pass up on that to do specifically the forbidden. What about the following case? So that if you follow this Imtim Tzilomar approach, we're saying follow the beis, the second side of this first question. So now we proceed to the second question and say, Hoyu lufonav shtei behemos shel kodesh, the achas mehem balas mum. He has two sanctified animals, and you can keep your finger on the chart and you see the number two, whereas the hektish animals, the sanctified ones, one is tam, blemish free, and one is mum, with a blemish. What else does he have? Ushtei behemos shel chulin, the achas mehem balas mum, two common animals, also one of them a bal mum, so that the physical nature of these animals are parallel. You have a tam, and a mum, and a mum. The Omar, and he says, Hare Elu Tachas Elu Mahu. It should be pointed out, as we've said in past Shiurim, that a Tam Kodesh, an unblemished sanctified animal, does not lend itself to redemption. It cannot be redeemed. So in this case, where the person is saying, Hare Elu Tachas Elu, there is a definite Tumura taking place. When dealing with a tam, you're talking in terms of a tmura. So mi omar tmimo tachas tmima latfusi, balasmum tachas balasmum li achuli. Do we say that as far as the tomim, the tom animals, so the tam hektish, he is replicating onto the tam chulin, and the balmum hektish, the blemished sanctified animal, that does lend itself to redemption, so he's redeeming it, transferring its sanctity onto the balmum chulin, oy dilma, or possibly, tamimo de chulin tachas balasmum de hektish, the tam of chulin is being the subject of the redemption of the balmum of hektish, and balasmum the chulin, and the blemished chulin animal tachas tamimo the hektish. Then the balmum of let's go over this again. In this Odilma situation, the Tmimo de Chulin Tachas Balas Mum de Hegish in an act of Tmura, and the Balmas Mum de Chulin Tachas Tmimo de Hegish as an act of Tmura, Ubetravayu Lohi, and both would generate Malkus. So, what is the din over here? Let us go over this case again, just to make sure that we've got it straight. We have this set up, as you can see in the chart on the inside margin, and he had said, Hare Elu Tachas Elu. So, reading the Gemara again from the second wide line, Mahu, what is the din? Mi Omar Tmimo Tachas Tmimo Latfusi. Is it Tam for Tmura? And that would be a sin and guilty of lashes. Balas mum tachas balas mum laachuli. If you and the mum for mum in a redemption fashion, that would not be a sin. Oy dilma, according to the second side of the question, it would actually be a case where both animals are involved in tmura, where the tomim of hegdish is exchanged, is replicated onto the balmum of chulin. that would be Tmima de Chulin Tachas Balas Mumdagish, the unblemished Chulin, it replicated upon it the Hektish Baal Mum, and Balas Mum de Chulin, the blemished Baal Mum, Tachas Tmima de Hektish, in a Tmura fashion, Uba Travayu Loki, and both would be guilty of lashes. The imtin siloma kohecho di iko hetero lo ovid isura ulachuli hu velo loki. In this last case, we saw that according to the first side of the possibility, you were saving yourself one set of malchus, because in the first side we were saying that we were redeeming the mum of the hektish onto the baal mum of the chulin in a redemption fashion. So, assuming that a person, when he has even a partial allowed option, he won't pass up on that. What about case three? Hoyu lefonav shalosh behemos shel hegdish ve'achas mehen baal asmum. He has three sanctified animals, one of which is with a blemish, and that too is illustrated on the inside margin. Ushlosh behemos shel chulin tamimos, and three chulin animals that are all unblemished. The Omar, and he said, Hare Elu Tachas Elu. Mi Amrinon. And again, you have Aleph O Dilmo Beis, two sides of the question. Do you say, Mi de Tmimos, Tachas Tmimos Latfusi, the Hektish Tomim animals, those have to be, when you're dealing with them, that has to be in a Tmura fashion, because as we said, there's no redemption option for those. And by virtue of the fact that two of them, of these two of the three sanctified animals are tam, so those are two out of three definite atfusi tmura cases. Tmimos nami tachas balasmum latfusi. The other, the chulin animals that are tam, are also going to be participatory in a tmura for the balmum of hegdish. That would mean all three hegdish animals are part of a tmura effort. Oy Dilma Hochanami, or do we say here too, since there is a of the three hektish animals, one of them may in fact be a redemption process. Hochanami here too, kohechodika hetera, where you have a heter, an allowed way, lo avidi surah, he's not going to do specifically a forbidden act. Vahi basraiso, and therefore the last one, the balmum of hektish, lachuli hu, that is redemption, so that he would be guilty only of two offenses and not three. The imtim salomar hochanami kivon to akati gavro lo ischazik beisuri. And if you say that in this case, in case three, the gavro, the person, the owner, hasn't gained a status of violating. Status change happens when one does something three times. In this case, knowing that people will pursue the allowed and not the forbidden, and here we have someone that had an option to pursue something allowed, and at the same time this person was not didn't achieve a status of a violator. So lo shovik heter velvety, so he wouldn't pass up in case three on doing something forbidden when he had a possibility of doing it in an allowed way. Boy Ravashi, hoyu lefonav arba behemos shel kodesh. What about case number four, where he's got four sanctified animals, viachas mehen balasmum, one of them is a blemished animal. The arba behemos shechulin tamimos, and he has four unblemished chulin animals. The Omar, and here he says again, Elu tachas Elu mahu. What is his intention here? So now, in analyzing this case, it is clear that three of the four have to be explained as a tmura, because you're dealing with unblemished hegdish animals. And remember, we said three can change a person's status. He becomes muhsak, becomes under the assumption of doing something forbidden, because he has three cases of that hat right over here. So mahu, what do we say? Hocha vaday kiva dischazik gavra bisuri loki ba'arba malkis. Do we say that this gentleman certainly has gained the status of a violator? That's a isuri, as a violator of sin. and therefore he will be assumed to have done all four in a forbidden way. Even the balas mum, he was using that in a tamura fashion, and therefore be guilty of four sets of lashes. Or do we say that afagav this chazik avra bisura, even though this person has the status as a violator, lo shavik inish hetera v'avid isura, when presented with a possibility of doing something in an allowed way, he won't pass up on it to do it in a forbidden way. V'hai basraisa, on the last one, the Hegdish Baal Mum, we can say La Hule Have. His intention there was for redemption. Teku. This remains unresolved. Im Hoiso Hegdish Baal Mum Yetse Lechulin Vitzorach Lasois Loi Domim. This is a quote from the Mishnah that we had on Daf Chof Vov Omid Beis. The Mishnah spoke about someone saying Zu Mechuleles Al Zu, a person was attempting to redeem an animal, and the Mishnah said that's not Tmura. V'im Hoya Hegdish Baal Mum, if the sanctified animal had been blemished, yotze l'chulin, it becomes chulin, it changes its status from hegdish to chulin, v'tzorech la'asos loy domim. And the Rashi explained there that there has to be an attempt made to ensure that the chulin animal that's absorbing the sanctity of this hegdish baal mum has the same value as the sanctified animal, so that when you're redeeming, you're redeeming and making sure that the hektish, the realm of sanctity, doesn't lose out. So I'm transferring the sanctity from one animal. If the animal was worth $100, I have to make sure that the animal now absorbing, the chulin animal absorbing the new sanctity, is also worth $100. So that we're talking about a concern of, we'll call it equivalency, of fairness when dealing with hektish. On the side of our Gemara, on the outside margin, we have a Nosei Mivne heading where we feature a diamond and we explain Machloikis Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish. These names you'll see in diamonds. The Hezber HaMishneh, in attempting to explain the Mishneh, the Katoni, that said, V'tzorach la'asos lo'i domim, the need for making sure that there is a change, a transfer of equality. Equality, equal value. Let us read the names first in the Gemara, and then continue with our introduction. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Yotze Lechulin Devar Torah, in doing this redemption, the Baal Mum that was sanctified leaves the realm of sanctity on a Torah level, V'tzorch Lasois Domim Midivrehem, and the need for making sure of an value equality, that is a rabbinic necessity. In other words, on a Torah level, even if there was a great discrepancy in value, it's still, this redemption would work. But it's a rabbinic expectation, says Rabbi Yochanan, to make sure that the value equivalent, there is a value equality. V'Reish Lakish Omar, Af Tzorach Lasois Domim Dvar Torah. According to Reish Lakish, there is a need to make sure, to ensure that there is an equivalency, on a Torah level as well. The Torah expects it, not just a rabbinic expectation. Now, when we talk about equality, same values, we're obviously trying to avoid a situation where there is a discrepancy. In general, there are two levels, or possibly three levels, of discrepancy. One is a minor discrepancy, which you say people would overlook that if you're dealing with in a commercial transaction between two commoners. That's called mechila. There's something called oino. Oino is a very specific point where there's a discrepancy of 1/6 of the value, where one in a common transaction, someone is getting ripped off. Either the seller is selling it for too little, or the buyer is paying too much at a discrepancy of 1/6. At that point, it's referred to as oino'o. And without getting into the different opinions that exist on this topic, which is a fairly subject of a fairly extensive discussion, particularly in Maseches Bava Metzia, in the fourth perek, but there is the general approach is that if there's a discrepancy known as ono of 1/6, though, the deal will go through, but there has to be a refund of the difference. Then there is a third level of discrepancy, which is called bitul mekach, where there's a discrepancy, an overcharge or an undercharge of more than 1/6 of the value, which results in the deal being called off. We are dealing with a redemption of something sanctified, transferring the sanctity onto something of chulin. And we're going to assume right now that the chulin animal is, we want the Mishnah's striving to have it equal in value to the sanctified animal. However, if there is a discrepancy, so we saw that you have to ensure that there isn't a discrepancy. What level of discrepancy are we trying to avoid? An ono'o situation or a bitul mekach situation? In other words, one might say that one might raise the possibility that ono'o doesn't exist in the realm of kachim. And that could be based on a pasuk of Al Toinu Ish Es Achiv, that when the Torah warns against mischarging, warns against ono, it's Ish Es Achiv, between two common people and not hekdesh. These are factors that come up in the discussion, especially when you learn the Gemara along with the Rashi. So by way of our markings, we have a crown shape highlighting the expressions oino and bitul mekach, and on the outside margin you can see the crown shape is featured, and we've written HaGemara Tevarer. The Gemara will clarify im medubar b'chtei oino o b'bitul mekach. Is the Mishnah anticipating a discrepancy on an oino level, 1/6, or on a bitul mekach level, which is above 1/6? And we've already said that the point of difference would be that in ono the deal goes through, but a refunding of or compensation is necessary to be made. In case of bitul mekach, the whole deal is called off. So we now continue in the Gemara, third line from the bottom. B'mai askinon, what are we involved with here? Inemo a oino, that the concern of the Mishnah, and hence Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are explaining this in terms of ono. Beho neimo Reish Lakish af tzorach lasois domim devar Torah. Would Reish Lakish say that the Torah expects me to be careful not to be guilty of ono here in the case of kachim? The Hotnan. We have a Tanaic source that says, Eilu dvarim she'ein lohem oino. The following are a list of things or areas in which the din of oino doesn't apply. Ho'avodim, slaves, a transaction of slaves and a mischarge. V'hashtoros, transaction of documents, of bills of debt. V'hakarkos, land transactions. V'ha'ekdeshos, and we've dashed underline hekdeshos, because this is of specific interest to us. Namely, the realm of Hekdesh doesn't fall under the prohibition of Oino. Therefore, you couldn't imagine Reish Lakish saying that one has to make sure on a Torah level that there is no discrepancy of 1/6 between the Hekdesh animal and the Chulin animal, because there is no Torah expectation of avoiding ono'o when you're dealing with Hekdesh. Elo? Bitul mekach. So rather, we're talking about a greater discrepancy that we are trying to avoid. The discrepancy of a greater than a sixth. The Gemara asks, if that's the case, that also creates a problem for us. Beho neimo Rabbi Yochanan tzorech lasois domim midivrehem. Would Rabbi Yochanan say that you have to avoid and make sure that there isn't a bittul mekach discrepancy with regard to hektish? Veha Omar. Now we have at the very top of Amud Beis, we're going to have two names, Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Yonah. We've underlined their names. They both comment or interpretations of Rabbi Yochanan, where Rabbi Yochanan says, and you can see that we've highlighted Rabbi Yochanan's name. You can see on the second, third line from the top, where Rabbi Yochanan says, he makes a comment, Oino ein lohen bitul mekach yesh lohem. That now the lohem is a pronoun. That there are items, we haven't said which ones they are yet, but there are items that don't have an onoa problem, but could have a bittul mekach problem. Rabbi Yochanan, let's not forget, in our diamond, spoke about the need for rectification or of equivalency on a rabbinic level. Rabbi Yochanan here is quoted as dealing with the topic of something having a bittul mekach problem. But in a moment, we're going to say a bittul mekach problem on a Torah level, not on a rabbinic level. Now, what item is Rabbi Yochanan referring to? So, as far as that's concerned, there are two opinions. You have Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Yonah explaining Rabbi Yochanan's remark that you see on the third line from the top, where he says, bittul mekach yesh lahem. What is Rabbi Yochanan's comment referring to? So we right now are going to emphasize Rabbi Yonah's approach, and he says that Rabbi Yochanan's comment on the third line from the top is relevant to hekdeshos. And Rashi points out hekdeshos and certainly to the realm of karkos. So if you focus on this point for right now, we would have a contradiction in Rabbi Yochanan. You have, on the one hand, if you assume that the Gemara at the bottom of Omid Aleph was dealing with Bittul Mekach, as we're assuming right now, we ruled out Onoa because we had a Mishnah that says Hektish doesn't fall under the Onoa prohibition. So it must be that the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish concerns Bittul Mekach. But then Rabbi Yochanan's comment in the diamond on Omid Aleph at the bottom said that the concern of equality the concern to avoid bittul mekach is a rabbinic concern, and here we're dealing with kachim. But here on the top of Amud Beis, you have Rabbi Yonah explaining Rabbi Yochanan as saying that hektish falls under a bittul mekach restriction on a Torah level, not on a mere rabbinic level. So that will be the problem. How to explain the Mishnah and make sure there's no contradiction at this point in Rabbi Yochanan. So at the last line we read on Chof Zayin Omid Aleph was that the Mishnah is concerned with that there shouldn't be a discrepancy of more than a sixth which would result in bittul mekach. And Rabbi Yochanan is allegedly saying that the need to avoid bittul mekach is a rabbinic concern. To that, the Gemara asks here at the top of Amud Beis, the Omar, and we put Rabbi Yirmiyah's comment in brackets simply to say that we're de-emphasizing Rabbi Yirmiyah at this moment, but Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Yonah are both commentaries on Rabbi Yochanan, who appears on the second, third line from the top here. But we'll read it anyway. Ve'omar Rabbi Yirmiyah akarkos dechulin, ve'Rabbi Yonah omar ahekdeshois. Travayu Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan Amri, they both say in the name of Rabbi Yochanan Oino Ein Lohem Bittel Mekach Yesh Lohem. Focusing on Rabbi Yonah, Rabbi Yonah's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan is that Hektish has a Bittel Mekach prohibition. In other words, a mischarging, a ripping off of Hekdesh above a sixth would be unacceptable on a Torah level, not a rabbinic level. Rabbi Yirmiyahu said, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, that Hekdesh, in fact, is not subject to Bittel Mekach on a Torah level, but Karkos would be, land transactions. So the Gemara says, Le'olam Abitul Mekach. You'll notice we have a volcano shape, and we're calling this Aleph. And under our Mivneh heading, on the outside margin, you can see we feature this shape, and we've written, Tshuvos Lahazbir Rabbi Yochanan V'Reish Lakish Misoif Omer Aleph. These are responses or approaches through which to explain Rabbi Yochanan V'Reish Lakish that we already had. So the Gemara here is saying, Le'olam Abitul Mekach, meaning we're going to continue with that which we concluded at the bottom of Omer Aleph in the second crown shape, that we are dealing with Bitul Mekach. But then we said we had a problem with regard to Rabbi Yochanan and Bittel Mekach by Hektish. Is it Doraisa or Derabbanan? And the solution here is the Epuch. Switch around, and the switch around would result in Rabbi Yochanan saying, Tzorech Lasois Domim Devar Torah. So that we're switching around the diamonds that we had on Omer Aleph, and having Rabbi Yochanan say that which Reish Lakish said, Rabbi Yochanan is saying then that in the realm of Hekdesh, you have to make sure, and he's explaining the Mishnah, that you have to avoid Bittel Mekach on a Torah level, thereby resolving Rabbi Yochanan on Omer Aleph with Rabbi Yonah's interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan over here on Omer Beis. The Gemara asks, Umi Motzis Amris Epoch? Can you really say this? Can you really use this answer to resolve the situation? Ha Nicha Lemandomar Ahekdeshois Vekol Shekein Akarkos. This switch around makes things smooth for Rabbi Yochanan, who said that the concern of Bittel Mekach applies to Hekdesh, to sanctified issues, and certainly to land. And the Chiddush was that even though the Pasuk speaks about Achiv, the dealing with one's fellow man, nevertheless, this is extended to include even Hekdesh. Elo leman de Omar akarkois, but according to Rabbi Yirmiyahu, who said that karka has a problem of bittel mekach, avol hekdeshois ein lohem bittel mekach, but hekdesh doesn't have a bittel mekach restriction, hechi epuch loha. How can you switch things around? If you take Rabbi Yirmiyahu's approach to the matter, Rabbi Yirmiyahu's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan was, we saw him on the top line over here, he said that Rabbi Yochanan's comment of Bittel Mekach exists only with regard to Karka and not with regard to Hekdesh. So as far as Hekdesh is concerned, Rabbi Yochanan through Rabbi Yirmiyahu's interpretation says there is no Bittel Mekach problem with regard to Hekdesh. But now, as a result of switching around the diamonds that we had on Omer Aleph, you have Rabbi Yochanan saying there is a Bittel Mekach consideration on a Torah level with regard to Hekdesh, an outright contradiction. Omar loch Rabbi Yirmiyahu, lo tepuch. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu says very simply, I don't go with Rabbi Yonah's approach of switching things around. I say don't switch things around. Leave things as they were. So that how were things? Rabbi Yochanan on Omer Aleph had said that Bittel Mekach is a concern only on a rabbinic level. And my comment, says Rabbi Yirmiyahu, regarding Rabbi Yochanan here at the top of this omit is on a Torah level, namely on a Torah level there is no Bittel Mekach with regard to Hekdesh. There may be only on a rabbinic level, and hence there is no contradiction. We have a bracketed section here, and the length of the brackets is indicated by the bracket length indicator, the vertical dash dotted line that appears in the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see all of these lines are in brackets. If we skip the bracketed section momentarily, we come up with Ve'i Boyes Ema. This is a second approach at explaining these shitas, the shitas of explaining Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and so that there should be no contradiction. So this is, as we say, a second approach, and you see another volcano shape with a base to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. The Olam Lo Tepuch. Don't switch things around, including Rabbi Yonah. And, well, assuming right now Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Yonah remain as they are, and there's no switching around of shitas on Omen Aleph, you'll say then, and we have to add another critical point, and that this Eboy Seymah is assuming now we're not talking about Bittul Mekach. We're going back to the approach represented in the first crown, three lines from the bottom of Omen Aleph, where we said that the issue between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish concerns Oino'o. In other words, the Mishnah said that Tzorach La'aslish Lodomim, that you have to make sure there's no mischarging between the Hekdish and the Chulin on an Oino'o level, the 1/6 ceiling issue. That the whole issue in the Mishnah then is an Ono'o issue. And if you take that approach, Udekokashia Loch Masnisen, the Gemara says over here, you'll say then that, well, that creates the old question of the Mishnah that was quoted in the Gemara that says, Hekdish doesn't have Ono'o. How will we be able to understand Reish Lakish, who says Tzorach La'aslish Domim Devar Torah, that you have to make sure, you have to resolve the Domim issue, the money issue, the value issue on a Torah level, and say that we are talking about on an Ono'o level, Mi De'oraisa, from a Torah standpoint, when the Mishnah says that Hekdish doesn't have an Ono'o violation associated with it? How are we going to resolve things then if we, as we say, go back to the drawing board? Reading the Gemara again, and if you take the approach that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are dealing with an Ono'o issue as far as the Mishnah is concerned, and Reish Lakish is saying that there is no that there is a need to resolve the Ono'o on a Torah level, when the Mishnah quoted says Eilu Dvorim that have no Ono Hegdeshos, we use the three dots simply to show that there are missing words from this. This is an abbreviated quote of the source that was quoted two lines from the bottom on Omer Aleph, where it said that these things have no Ono in them, and Hegdesh was referred to. There's no problem. Kede Rav Chisda, adopting Rav Chisda's approach. The Omar Rav Chisda, my Ein Lohen Oino, what is the meaning of Ein Lohen Oino in this source? Not that there is no Oino problem, quite the contrary. Einon Betoiras Oino, they don't have the Oino range. The Oino range states that from up till a sixth discrepancy, the deal will go through, and it's called Mechila. Ein lohen ono means einon betoiras oino. They don't have the rules of ono, meaning dafilu pochos michdei oino choser. Even a minor discrepancy of value, of even less than a sixth discrepancy, the deal could be called off. There's no, the deal is choser, is reversed at any minor discrepancy. So that if you accept Rav Chisda's interpretation of the Mishnah there, the Mishnah quoted second line from the bottom of Omen Aleph, then Reish Lakish makes a lot of sense. Reish Lakish is saying that Tzorach La'aslish Lo Domim, you have to resolve the value issue even under a sixth, because Hekdish is so strict that the Ono range doesn't exist with regard to Hekdish. And hence, you have to resolve this matter on a Torah level. Now, we had skipped the section of Gemara above and put it in brackets. Now we go back to the bracketed section. Before doing that, we just note the explanation that we had for this skip. On the inside margin, there's a starred comment. Matras ha-sugrayim, the purpose of these brackets, is l'shem dilug, for the purpose of skipping. Kidei lahatzmid hatshuvos beinyan Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish zu lezu, so as to create a continuity of answers. We had answer Aleph, the first volcano shape, and then whereby we attempted to resolve the comments of Rabbi Yochanan, thereby maintaining Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as we explained as a result of the switch around. And then the second approach was don't switch around and go back and say, mention that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are not talking at all about Bittul Mekach, but rather about Ono, as we just got finished discussing. So we were able to see the two approaches to resolve Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish first. Now, in the bracketed section, our comment says, B'socha Sograyim, Mala she'ela legabi rabirmio rabioino umetaretzis. Within the bracketed section, a question will be raised concerning rabirmio and rabioino, and there will be a resolution. So now, when we look in the bracketed section, lemo b'dishmuel komifugi, we start off with a question that lasts a few lines. We've provided a long question marking, the shin that's encircled, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, with a descending vertical dashed line showing you the length of this section. Lema b'deshmuel komifudi. Should we say that the controversy, the machlokas between Rabbi Yoino and Rabbi Yirmiya in their interpreting Rabbi Yochanan is based on a rule of Shmuel's? Namely, one will agree with Shmuel, the other will disagree with Shmuel. D'yomar Shmuel. Shmuel says, hektish shav emona, hektish, something sanctified worth $100, shechilulo al shav epruta, that you redeemed it onto something worth a shav epruta, a very small value. Whatever a shav epruta is, if you want to say a dime, so say a dime. You took something worth $100 and then transferred its sanctity on something worth a dime. Mechulol, it goes through, it works. So that's Shmuel's halacha. Shmuel obviously says that the issue of Bittul Mekach with regard to Hekdesh has no place, has no role. The Rabbi Yoino less lay to Shmuel. Rabbi Yoino wouldn't hold from Shmuel's rule whatsoever. If you recall, Rabbi Yonah, who was on the first, second line from the top, you see Rabbi Yonah's name underlined, and he said, Ahekdeshos, meaning that Rabbi Yochanan's comment on the third line, which we dashed underlined, Bittul Mekach Yesh Lahem, that comment that there is a Bittul Mekach consideration, Rabbi Yonah says, with regard to Hekdeshos, that would run directly opposite Rabbi Shmuel's teaching over here, that Hekdesh Shav Emunah, you could transfer onto something, Shav Epruta, massive discrepancy, and it goes through. And therefore, it would seem, and this is our question, that Rabbi Yonah disavows Shmuel, for Rabbi Yirmiya is lay to Shmuel. Rabbi Yirmiya was simply saying on the top that with regard to Karkois of Chulin, there is Bittul Mekach, but with regard to Hekdesh, there is no Bittul Mekach. Oh, if there's no Bittul Mekach consideration, which would mean there's no problem per se and a massive discrepancy with regard to Hekdesh, well, that would be in line with Shmuel that said Hekdesh Shav Emunah Shchilah Shav Epruta Mechulo. So should we say that? Very simply, that Rabbi Yoino would disagree with Shmuel and Rabbi Yirmiya accepts Shmuel? Loi, don't say that. Rather, Bein Demor Ubein Demor Is Le De Shmuel. Both Reb Yoino and Reb Yirmiyo accept the principle echoed by Shmuel. The Reb Yoino Sovar, Reb Yoino, he would say, Ki Omar Shmuel, Shmuel, who said that there is no Bitol Nekach by Hekdesh, that's the Eve, that's post facto. If you went ahead and did a performed a redemption with such a massive discrepancy, it will be redeemed. But that's only if you did it post facto. But to do something at the outset like that, even Shmuel would say, "Don't do that." And that's how Reb Yona, who said that Hekdesh is connected to the realm of Bitul Mekach, that's how Reb Yona would understand Shmuel. Reb Yirmiyo Savar Afilu Lechadchilo, and Reb Yirmiyo is of the opinion that Shmuel says his halacha even as a first choice, that if you have something of Hekdesh worth 100 and you have an opportunity to redeem it onto something worth a dime, you can go ahead and do that, even as a first consideration. The next section of Gemara we learned earlier, and that we could just read through the Gemara again without any further explanation, but realizing Ve'i Boyas Emo is a second approach to resolving the Mishnah and the comments Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish made, without having us run into a problem from the Mishnah quoted second line from the bottom of Amud Beis with regard to Reish Lakish. Don't switch anything around. Don't switch Reb Yochanan and Reish Lakish around as we did in our first approach. And if you say that the discussion concerns Oino, and then Reish Lakish was confronted by the Mishnah that said Elu Dvarim She'ein L'Moino and included Hekdeshos, that's no problem. Elu Dvarim that have no Ono, including Hekdeshos, that is explained Kidder Rav Chisda. The Omar Rav Chisda, my Ein Lohem Oino, what is meant by that Mishnah that says that Hekdeshos Ein Lohem Oino, Ein On Beturas Oino. That when dealing with Hekdesh, they don't have any of the rules of Ono, which gave a certain amount of latitude up to a sixth. What the Mishnah there is saying, there is no latitude when it comes to Hekdesh. And hence Reish Lakish's comment of Tzorach Lasus Lomim Dvar Torah is very appropriate. Omar Ula Loi Omru, that we don't say that the Hedyot, who let's say ripped off Hekdesh, if there was a discrepancy, Elo B'Shomui Betray. By the Mishnah having taught Tzorach Lasus L'Domim, meaning we have to avoid any discrepancy, and if there is a discrepancy, so then the owner of the animal that just redeemed with a discrepancy in value, he has to compensate Hekdesh. This need for compensation is so only if the initial evaluation, which turned out to be wrong, we'll say, was made by two people. Again, lo omru ela b'shamui. Shamui means evaluation, betray, where the evaluation that turned out to be erroneous was made by two people. Avol b'shamui b'tlosif, the initial evaluation was made by three, namely the person's chulin animal was evaluated to be of equal value to the Hekdesh, and it turned out to be a mistake, but that initial evaluation was made by three, then the owner does not have to make any compensation to Hekdesh in the event that assessment was challenged, even if 100 others come along and say that the first three assessors were wrong, lo hadar, the deal is not called off, and his redemption sticks. So that if someone redeemed a Hekdesh animal onto something worth less, a chulin animal worth less, But the initial evaluation that stated that the chulin animal was equal value to the hegdish was done by three assessors. Even if 100 additional assessors come along and say that the first guys were wrong, the deal, the redemption stands. At this point, we have an introduction to this particular discussion in the outside margin under our No Say heading, where we featured Mosai Amrinon. When do we say Dim Hoiso Tois Beshumas Hekdish Deboi Lohoisef Hayitra? When is it that if there was a mistake in a Hekdish evaluation, that compensation has to be made? So Ulo is saying this is true only if the initial assessment was made by two and then subsequently challenged. However, if the initial assessment was made by three, that assessment sticks and the owner doesn't have to make any compensation. Let's take a look at the Rashi, where you see a double star. A few lines down from here, we've written in a double star to help you find it. Lo Amru, this is a comment on Ula. Lo Amru de Mishalim lo Hedyot lehegdish kol ha'ino. The Mishnah that teaches it, Tzorach Lasus lo Damim, that the owner has to compensate hegdish for any discrepancy. Ela de Shamua Bei Trey, that the initial evaluation was made by two, Bereisha, Vito, and they made a mistake, Vesu, Hadri Tlosa Veshamua Legdish Tvei, and later three came along and made a more positive evaluation for the benefit of Hegdish later on. So we say that since the initial evaluation was done by two people, three others come along and say they were wrong, they undervalued the Chulin. They overestimated the value of the chulin, and really there is a discrepancy. So the owner has to compensate. However, if the initial evaluation was made by three people, even if 100 come later on, the initial evaluation sticks. The Gemara now asks a question that lasts a few lines. You can see we have a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. We have a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, indicating all of these lines opposite the vertical dashed line form the question. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is this so? V'omar av safra, hecha omar mea ketre utre kemea. When is it that we say that two are like 100, and 100 are like two in terms of the value of someone's comment? That's le'inyan edus. That's when it comes to testimony. When in the realm of testimony, we say that when two people testify, they are the ultimate in testimonial strength. In other words, two are like 100, and 100 are like two. Namely, that if two people testify and 100 people challenge their testimony, the fact that they're challenged by so many more doesn't undo the testimony of the two. So that the strength of a small number being enough to go up against a large number, that's with regard to the realm of testimony, where you start off with two, which is a minimum number of witnesses. Two is as good as 100. Avol le'inyan umdana, when it comes to umdana, matters of assessment and evaluation, not matters of testimony. Boser deos aslinon, we follow majority numbers. So that if three made an initial evaluation and four or five or 100 came later and said they're wrong, so we go with those greater number of opinions that challenge the lesser opinions who made the first evaluation. Vesu, dafilu tlosa utlosa, even in a case of three versus three, where there's a second group of three assessors challenge the first group of three, lo azlinon boser basra, would we not follow the second group of three who gives a more beneficial assessment for hektish? Yad hektish al ha'elyona. We have a rule that when it comes to a challenge between a private person and Hekdish, Hekdish has the upper hand. So even if it were a case of three against three, and the second three indicate that Hekdish needs to receive compensation, we would follow what they say. So how are we to understand Ula in light of all that we've said in this question? The Gemara answers, Kosovar Ula, Tzorech la'asos domim midivrehem. Ula takes the approach, like we saw initially in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that the Mishnah that says that you have to make an equivalency consideration with regard to redemption of Hekdesh, that's a rabbinic concern. In other words, the need to compensate Hekdesh would be on a rabbinic level. The whole derabbanan akilu bo rabbanan, and when you have a matter of doubt as a result of, let's say, an argument between evaluators, we have the right to follow the makil approach, the more lenient approach with regard to the owner, and therefore, since it's the whole necessity of compensating Hekdesh for a discrepancy is a rabbinic concern at best, when there is a doubt, the owner is entitled to benefit. And as such, Ula says even though if the initial evaluation was made only by two and challenged later by three, Hekdesh will be able to benefit. But if the initial evaluation was made by three, that will stick to the benefit of the owner. But all of that is because of the need to resolve the discrepancy is only on a rabbinic level. The Mishnah. Hare zu tachas oilo tachas chatos. Loi omar klum. If a person says he has a chatos standing there, and a chulin animal, and he says, Hare zu tachas olo, or tachas chatos, that comment doesn't take hold. However, tachas chatos zu, the tachas olo zu, tachas chatos, the tachas olo sheyesh li babayis, or he says, I want to exchange this for a chat. Either he says this chatos, pointing to the chatos standing in front of him. In other words, he specifies the chatos by saying this one that's standing in front of me, or he says tachas chatos that I have in my house. And hoyo lo, if he in fact had a chatos or an ola in his house, devorov kayomim, then what he says will take hold. Omar al habehemo tameo vi al balas mum. If a person says regarding an animal that's of an unkosher variety or of a blemished animal, hare elu oilo, I'm declaring the horse or this blemished animal to be an ola. No, Omar klum. That is of no significance. It doesn't take hold. However, hare elu lu oilo, if he says, I want these to be li'ola, adds the lamed to his comment, so what he is really saying, he's indicating, I'm dedicating the value of these things, of the horse or of the blemished animal, to be toward the purchase of an ola. So, yimochru, then they are sold. The yavi b'demehem ola, he would then bring for the money that he fetches in their sale, an ola sacrifice. By way of our markings, you see that we have a double underline and a dashed underline. In the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, you can see we featured this marking, and we've indicated these are He'eroisov Sh'Rabino Marav, comments made by Rabino Marav saying the Masnisin lo ke Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, pointing out that laws taught in our Mishnah indicate that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir, nor is it like Rabbi Shimon, that we will see explained later in the Gemara. Omer Rav Yehuda Marav, Masnisin, our Mishnah that said, Tachas Oila Lo Omar Klum, if he says regarding an animal, Hare Zu Tachas Oila, that has no bearing, doesn't take hold. That's our Mishnah, and that's Masnisin Delok Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah is not going to be like Rabbi Meir. Direk Rabbi Meir, Ha Ein Adam Motzi Dvarav Levatala. We know from other sources or that according to Rabbi Meir, when a person says something that seems to have no meaning, based on the rule that a person would never say something that has no meaning, and therefore we would interpret what a person says, even though on the surface it sounds like it has no meaning, to yes have meaning. Therefore, our Mishnah cannot be like Rabbi Meir, because our Mishnah has a person that says something of no meaning, and in fact that's the result. Lo omar klum, he said nothing. Continuing, hare elu l'oila imachru v'yovi b'domav oila. Our Mishnah said that if a person said regarding a behemoth tmeah or a balas mum, they are sold immediately. They're sold outright without any waiting for a blemish to develop. So the Gemara infers taimo de behemoth tmeah u balas mum. The reason that there is an immediate sale without any waiting for a blemish to develop is because we're dealing with either an unkosher variety animal or an animal that's already blemished. Delo chazion, they're not fit for sacrifices to begin with. Lo bayon mumah, so there's no need to wait for a blemish. But we can infer that's only because you have two examples of something of no connection to sacrifices per se, that we say sell them, that they sell them straight out without any waiting. But we could infer that if a person set aside a female animal and dedicated it as an osham or an ola, these are examples of sacrifices that must come from male animals. Well, in such a case, though, you would require to wait till the female animal that you set aside or dedicated as an osham or an ola, you'd have to wait for the female animal to develop a blemish. And why would that be? Well, because a female animal has a connection, has a sacrificial connection, insofar as a female animal is fit to serve as a shlomim sacrifice. So even though you misdirected the sanctity on it, namely, you labeled it an ola or osham, nevertheless, that does not exempt him from needing to wait for a blemish to surface on the nekeva. Okay, so with that in mind, our Mishnah then is teaching this point, that someone who was mafresh in a caver for osham and ola would require a mum before you could sell it. Omer Rav Yehuda Marav, Masnis and Dolo Kribi Shimon. This inference from our Mishnah shows that our Mishnah is not in conformity to Rabbi Shimon Disnan. Rabbi Shimon says with regard to someone who sets aside a nekeva or dedicates a nekeva as an osham, Rabbi Shimon Omer Timocher Shalobimum. One could sell a female animal dedicated to a type of sacrifice that must be of a male gender. Rabbi Shimon says sell it without a blemish developing. So that our Mishnah doesn't agree or is not in conformity to Reb Shimon's approach. That represents the end of this perek, the fifth perek of Temura. And Mirtz Hashem, next time we continue on Da'af Chav Ches with the sixth perek. So with that, we conclude our shiur for today.